Welcome to
Fine.
This week, the poetry of Seattle's Joseph Kepler.
Water from the sky.
Acid rain, acid rain wood, acid rain fish, acid rain dove, acid rain buck, acid rain, acid rain, acid rain.
I don't think he's afraid of failing. In fact, I think sometimes he tries to fail, and that may seem kind of absurd, but he wants to take risks and find out just how far he can go without falling off the cliff. And that, I mean, he'll come up right to the edge.
Love. 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 Love.
There's the appearance that it's very simple. You say, well, I could have done that. But then you didn't do that, and you're forced to realize that the reason you didn't do it is because you didn't think of it. Or even if you just thought of it, you didn't stick to it and follow it through. And what I mean by the conceptual, which is a thread that runs through Joe's work, that it's a kind of art that draws your attention to the frame of mind which was necessary first to conceive and then follow through in the conception of the art. And the simplicity of the work brings that out. In fact, I think it's one of the necessary aspects of the work to make a piece of art truly conceptual. It has to look so simple that anyone could do it, because then they're thrown back upon themselves in a self-examining manner. And that is involved in a lot of what Joe does.
Actually, everybody's dying. Night's falling. I'm proud to have electric lights. I like the way glass gives multiple reflections and realities. Fish are swimming in the ocean. Birds are feeding their young. People are making love. Television is playing the world. Ships are traveling with goods. Trucks are barreling down the highway. It's snowing in the mountains. It's raining in the tropics. Soldiers are fighting. Presidents are sleeping. The newspaper rolls on for tomorrow. And tomorrow, like yesterday, creates tonight. Everybody's dying. Everybody's alive, actually.
Seattle's Joseph Kepler, poet, visual artist, audio writer, critic, and editor. This week we'll hear a wide selection of his poetry. He's the editor of Poets, Painters, Composers. Every odd edition happens in print, and every even one happens otherwise. Number 2 is a poster, and number 4 is an audio tape featuring work by Henri Chopin, Bernard Heidsieck, Jean-Paul Curtet, Richard Coste-Lanitz, and others. Next week's show will concentrate on that tape. This week's show is on his own poetry, on 3 interviews I did with him, and comments on his work from Seattle poets Trudy Mercer and Stephen Thomas, whom you've heard, and Carl Diltz. The poetry on this week's show was recorded from his Seattle home and also from Open Space in Victoria, B.C., where Joseph read in June of 88.
Composition. Rule number 1. I like the way this is laid out, so I'll show this. Composition, rule number 1. There'll be more rules. Rule number 2. There'll be many, many rules. Rule number 3. There'll be rules you know and rules you don't. Rule number 4. Know all the rules. Rule number 5, all the rules can never be all the rules. Rule number 6, compose the poem.
When we spoke together in Victoria, I mentioned the phenomenon of some young poets evaluating poems almost completely on the basis of the political content, as though nothing else mattered, and you replied that you thought that it was an important phase for a poet to go through.
Right. There's so many different meanings to politics these days. Particularly the younger poets tend to use the word politics in its abstract sense, meaning everything everyone does in terms of procedures and power and people. And they perceive politics in terms of an all-encompassing role in life. And I think it's important to acknowledge the presence of politics, its pervasive power, influence in everyone's life, but also to work through that and to see what is beyond the understanding of politics, what is, if I could coin a phrase, post-political for a poet. There's, I think, a common trend to wash away all apolitical poetry as if it is only the political stand that's important in poetry, and to think of the most politically correct poetry as the best poetry. There's dangers in that, in the sense that it then, I think, subjugates poetry to politics, and I think that should be the other way. I think politics, ideally, should be subject to poetry, not vice versa. And particularly for poets,
the country's played out. The country's played out. The country's played out. Read the papers. Watch the news. The country's played out. Well, the corporations, the men who sell themselves, or lose themselves, or forget themselves, who go to business school, who never hear any good poetry, the men and women in towers, in headquarters, in complexes, control the state. You and I here, we can say all we want, but the country's played out. The rivers are gone, replaced with shipping lanes. The horses have disappeared, replaced by General Motors. The birds poisoned, and love stops. A detail in the contract. Yeah. The country's played out. The country's played out. So friends, sing the blues. Sing those blues. They go like this. Oh, mama, mama. Oh, mama, mama. Oh, mama, mama. Why'd you leave me here? Why'd you leave me here?
Carl Diltz works with Joseph Kepler on the production of Poets, Painters, Composers.
The first issue of his magazine, Poets, Painters, Composers, was real political. Had a lot of in that it had a lot of things to say about political issues, foreign policy, and he's, you know, I really respect Joe's opinions about politics, and he's thought about that a lot. And he still, the key is he's still independent of any political viewpoint or whatever. I think, I don't think he's a, you know, he's not going, he talks about politics, but he isn't a politician, mm-hmm. so to speak, which a lot of local poets are.
Trudy Mercer, another friend of Joseph Kepler's, edits Red Lines, another Seattle magazine of poetry, photography, visual art, and otherwise experimental writing. The next edition is called Empo. She also manages the Soundview Cafe, which doubles as a performance place.
He wrote an article a couple of years ago. I believe the title was Poetry and Politics, or Poetry in the City, I think that was it, where it discussed bringing poets into the city government to encourage creativity and not limit politics to politicians or poetry to poets, to bring those things together and kind of jumble them up in a way so that our lives aren't segmented or compartmentalized and regimented in a way where we lose our humanity. Mm-hmm. And that art is not really just something that is done only by artists, and that politics is not something that is done only by politicians, and that we lose wonderful elements of our lives by letting ourselves become specialized.
I am the hope of propaganda. I am the news I'll be. I am the dream of the press release. I am the spectator of spectacles. I am the citizen of government. I am the statistic of statistics. I am the Supreme Courted man. I am the congressman's vote. I am the pursued by billboards. I am the follower of facts. I am the believer in science. I am the idol of engineering. I am the behavior of psychology. I am the thing of society. I am the answerer of telephones. I am the fueler of automobiles. I am the input, output, outtake, intake, umpake system. I am the eyes, blind. I am the ears, deaf. I am the words, dead. I am the life of the pavement. I am the witness of daily crimes. I am the legacy of Holocaust. I am the history of her. I am the angle and plot. I am the lost ethics of a story. I am the fiction of triangles. I am the number in language. I am the giver and taker of money. I am the moviegoer, radio listener, TV viewer, 40-hour-a-week worker. I am the comedy. I am the tragedy. I am the contract without despair. I am the forgotten criminal. I am the least of earth, least of bird, least of bear, least of frog, least of snake. I am not of this world. I am not of that world. I am the future lost to now. I am the past of love. I am the suspect at borders. I am the barbed wire. I am the words of the spokesperson. I am the hope of propaganda. The news I hear. Thank you.
That was the last poem Joseph Kepler read at the Open Space reading in Victoria, June 88. Trudy Mercer on some of his other readings.
I've seen Joe perform with a variety of unusual instruments. He's worked with rubber bands, coffee can. I've seen him perform a poem called The Club, where he slapped a stick into his hand, and the poem is about weapons. Very effective. Another piece where he beat two bricks together until they became fragments of bricks while reading a poem about war. He read a poem, I believe called Adam, in which he undressed himself in public at the reading. I also saw him read wearing nothing more than 2 5-foot by 1-foot mirrors. I also saw him read a piece about an audience, paying really no mind to the audience that was there. He also ran a place, very unusual, the Cabaret Hegel, where he presented a number of artists doing many, many different kinds of work, ranging from traditional poetry to experimental jazz and the kind of conceptual work we're talking about. Unfortunately, I-90 decided that the Cabaret Hegel was in its way, and it no longer exists.
I try to understand poetry, and I try to understand politics. And it doesn't matter whether people agree or disagree with a particular poem, so, you know, Democracy, for example, or The Club. But I think the listener or the reader will understand what is being said and make the connections with the poem and understand it as above politics, as both very, very political and yet beyond those kinds of day-to-day coverages of the political dimensions. I try to address people not in terms of you know, the way a newspaper addresses the reader or the way television covers politics, but in a way that poetry, I think, covers. And I mean that in the sense of going over politics, and I do try and do it that way.
The club. Club's all right. Of course, a knife cuts. You bleed and die. Club's all right. But knives, they're popular. Now take a gun. There's no reason to be so close as with a club or a knife. The club's all right. The knife's better. The gun's better than both. Now take a tank. It's better than a gun. You're inside firing away. People with guns can't shoot you. You're protected. No need for a club or knife or gun. With a tank, you know you're safe. Now take a jet. You drop bombs on tanks, and tanks can't reach you. A jet with bombs, better than a club, better than a knife, better than a gun, better than a tank. Now take a missile with a nuclear warhead. You're in charge. Stronger than clubs, knives, or guns. There's no need to be holed up in a tank or a plane or holding on to any gun, knife, or club. You're clean. Just press computers. Their language, Fortran, COBOL, BASIC, Pascal, and those missiles take off to blow up the world. And you're clean. Now take outer space and armed satellites. Then take submarines, which launch Poseidons from underwater. Submarine space warfare, much better than clubs. Now take yourself. You're better than a satellite, better than a submarine. You kill with them, they kill with you. The club.
This is relatively new. It's an election year.
Democracy. If there are any problems you're experiencing with the arrangement, let me know. The age of Goneril and Reagan. In this fat age, transfixed by abstract enormity, govern, love, loved with cynical knives. Listen, everyone, whisper, me and you, whisper about one another. News, old news. News, old news. News, old news. A person was to write about nothing important. He was about to lose his job because nothing important ever happened.
Then he wrote, importantly, about nothing important. His job was saved.
You haven't published a book, Joseph. Why is that?
Well, Jim, let me see. Several reasons, I suppose. My most recent thinking about books is that there are too many of them, and they're of the wrong, just the wrong mentality. Books, I think, are taking on this aspect of a personal achievement. It's almost like a sport, a careerism. One must have a book in order to meet the degree requirements, or to get the grant, or to make one's way in the poetry world. And they're all self-beguiling reasons for writing a book of poetry. There's too many books of poetry that have not dealt with themselves critically enough before they've been published. And there's just so many editors and so many publishers and so many poets that the field it's become so so loose. It's sad for me, and I don't want to add to that. So I'm very careful about not doing a book right now. I don't see why a poem has to be stuck in a book. Why can't a poem be read live and be sufficient in that sense? Why can't a poem just accept itself on a long piece of paper, or a small piece of paper, on a postcard? Why can't a poem be read on a phone? Why does a poem need to be in a book? And I think in our case, in our both our cultures, there's a cultural conditioning, a push on poets to perform that way, to have their books out there. And even the very political poets, it is funny in a way, you know, that's a received notion to them, that, and they follow that, even though it's the best way to, I think, to oblivion. Poets' books today do not seem to me to be of lasting importance. I've read many of them and reviewed many of them, and there's a curious notion that it's a personal accomplishment to have a book of poetry out. So we have these forests that are, you know, gradually disappearing, and more books going out. So that's the current reason for not doing a book, and obviously there that'll change. I think if there's a good reason for doing a certain kind of book, I'll do that. And certainly magazines, the journal, Poets, Painters, Composers is important for me to do. But I feel that that's a shared endeavor, that the poetry and the essays and the criticality expressed in the magazine, in the printed version of the magazine, produces an importance of lasting value. It's at least I hope so.
Makes it very difficult to locate somebody's work. I mean, I went around through the library and had a hard time finding anything by Joseph Kepler.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you went through that trouble, Jim. It's nice to hear that, and it you know, for you and for people who would be interested in a poet's work, it's important to have ways of getting at the work. And I don't know the answer to that. There's, you know, I'll look for a certain poet's work, or I'll look for a certain subject. You know, go, you know, for the best library in Seattle, either the downtown branch of the Seattle Public Library or the Suzzolo Library at the University of Washington. And often the books and the magazines and the work that I'm looking for won't be there. And there's just no way I can get a hold of it unless I write directly to the poet. Either, you know, they're in a different country, or it's... It's strange. We live supposedly in this global village, but it's very difficult to get the work that one needs, or one wants and thinks one needs in order to carry on one's own work. I don't like to You know, I'm in the same boat as far as that's concerned. To publish a book makes it too easy on the institutions and on the grant givers and on the governments and on the, you know, it's fast food, fast poetry food, and it's just not working that way for many of us. And each poem, you know my work. Well, the work that you do know, you know it's some of the work is individual. It's not, it couldn't appear in print and be the same poem as it is when it's voiced.
Right.
And you know from your experience with tape work, audio. Poetry has to be heard. If it exists in print on a page, it's a different version of it. It's not the same as it is in the ear, as it is on the eye. So how are you going to do that? You know, have a book with a tape in it? Well, perhaps do that. Redundance. That's been done and done well, and not so well, too.
Multiple masses. Multiple masses, redundant, Baltimore, masses.
Seattle's Joseph Kepler. On the one hand, a lot of the work he does is published in very limited editions. Poets, Painters, Composers comes out in editions of 300. There are a lot of financial reasons for that. Number 3, for instance, which has a silkscreen cover and many hand touches within, undoubtedly cost at least the $20 US per copy it costs, and he basically does it with his own money, no grants. Very much a labor of love. When we return, I'll give you his address if you'd like to contact him about his own work or Poets, Painters, Composers. You're listening to Fine Lines. We pause now for station identification.